asleep. I keep my magic in my heart. Keep up your spirit, keep up your faith, baby.
Welcome to Fight the Good Fight, a production of Freedom Force Florida. And now your hosts, Michael Williams and Tabitha Brown.
Welcome back, everyone. Get ready to deep dive into the world of juvenile sentencing, specifically in Florida. We're talking court rulings, legal history, and even a proposed amendment called the Mercy for Children Act.
This is a big one, with decades of legal battles to unpack.
It's complicated stuff for sure, so we'll break down the most important points and explain how we got here.
Big questions about justice, rehabilitation, and second chances.
Exactly. And to help us navigate all of this, we're going to follow the journey of Randy Baggett.
He's fighting to change the system from inside the system.
As the founder of Freedom Force Florida, or FFF.
He's just one of 175 juvenile offenders in Florida, all eligible for parole, but stuck.
So these are all people who committed crimes as minors.
Right. And they're finding the system that's supposed to give them a second chance is anything but merciful.
Okay, so what's the core issue here?
It boils down to this. Florida has these two separate ways of sentencing juveniles for serious crimes, and they can drastically impact your life. One offers judicial review, and the other, a parole system that often feels like a dead end.
Hold on, two systems? That doesn't seem right. How does that even work?
Imagine two teenagers, both convicted of similar crimes as juveniles. One gets sentenced under a system that gives them a chance to go before a judge later on, you know, present evidence of rehabilitation, and argue for their release. The other, stuck with a parole system where they don't get those opportunities.
Two totally different paths. And we're talking big differences in average release age too, right?
Huge. 51 years old for those with judicial review versus a staggering 92 years for those eligible for parole.
92 years, so basically a life sentence.
Pretty much. It's like the case of Angelo Atwell.
Right. Wasn't he sentenced back in 1990 for a crime he committed when he was 16?
16 years old, and his parole eligibility date, 2130.
Essentially sentenced to die in prison.
Exactly.
And I bet this is where FFF's proposal, the Mercy for Children Act, comes in.
Yeah.
What are they hoping to achieve with that?
It's all about making the 2014 sentencing guidelines, the ones that offer judicial review, retroactive, giving the older parole eligible group a real shot at a second chance.
So they changed the rules of the game, and anyone sentenced before that got a much worse deal.
Got it. You got it. But to really understand how this happened, we need to go back to some pivotal Supreme Court rulings that changed the landscape of juvenile sentencing.
All right, so back to the courtroom. What were these Supreme Court rulings that changed how we view juvenile sentencing?
Three landmark cases, Roper v. Simmons, Graham v. Florida, and Miller v. Alabama. These cases weren't just about the law, they changed how the system views young offenders.
Okay, but those case names don't really tell me much. What did the court actually decide?
Essentially, that juveniles are constitutionally different from adults when it comes to criminal culpability.
Interesting. So there's a reason to treat juvenile offenders differently.
It all comes down to brain science. The parts of the brain that control impulse control, long-term planning, understanding consequences.
They're not fully developed in teenagers, right?
Right. And we're talking about important decision-making pathways that are still developing well into a person's 20s.
Makes sense. We expect teenagers to be impulsive, maybe not think things through, but the law often holds them to the same standards as adults.
Exactly. And that's what the court addressed. They said because of these developmental differences, it's unconstitutional to automatically sentence a juvenile to life without parole, even for serious crimes. Brains are literally wired differently at that age.
So how did Florida respond? Did they change their sentencing guidelines for juveniles?
Well, this is where things get complicated and where Randy Baggett's situation comes in. Florida made changes in 2014, but with a catch.
There's always a catch. What was it?
The changes only apply to crimes committed after 2014. Anyone sentenced before that, under the old system, left in limbo.
So even though the Supreme Court said it's unconstitutional to automatically sentence juveniles to life without parole, Florida essentially created two systems.
Yeah, it created a system where the date of your crime could determine your fate.
Wow. Okay, so two paths for young offenders, each with different rules. What does that judicial review actually look like? What are those opportunities that someone sentenced before 2014 might be missing?
It's more like what you'd think of as a fair trial. In a judicial review, a juvenile offender can go before a judge with a lawyer and present evidence of their rehabilitation.
They can show how they've changed since the crime.
Exactly. Call witnesses, show their accomplishments, demonstrate remorse, and argue that they're not the same person they were. Now, compare that to the parole system for those sentenced before 2014.
Okay, let's talk about the parole system. What makes it so different?
Imagine a hearing that lasts just 10 minutes. No lawyer, no real chance to present evidence of progress, and the decisions based on the original crime more than any rehabilitation.
Wait, no lawyer? That doesn't seem fair at all.
That lack of fairness is a big reason for the Mercy for Children Act.
It's like the system saying, we don't care if you've changed, we're holding you to who you were, however many years ago.
And that goes against what we know about adolescent brain development, right?
Right. This isn't just a legal debate. It's about whether we're punishing people for mistakes they made as kids or whether we believe in rehabilitation, in second chances. So this parole system, it seems like it's designed to keep people in prison, not really help them rejoin society.
Yeah, and here's where it gets even trickier. See, Florida actually got rid of parole a while back.
Wait, got rid of it? How are people still stuck in the system then?
It was back in 1995 they did away with it, but get this. Thousands of inmates, we're talking a lot of those sentenced as kids, they were sentenced before that change.
So they're stuck in this weird legal limbo.
Yeah.
Eligible for parole that doesn't even exist anymore.
Pretty much. It's like they're stuck in the past at a time before we really understood how kids' brains work, you know, the whole thing about rehabilitation.
So even though it's gone, parole is still a reality for people like Randy Baggett. Like a broken promise.
It is. And you have to remember, the parole system, it always focused on the crime, not how much a person's changed.
Right. Yeah, making it almost impossible to get out, even after years of good behavior.
Yeah.
Doesn't that go against, like, the Constitution? Didn't those Supreme Court rulings say something about that?
That's the big question. And that's why groups like FFF, they've been fighting Florida's parole system for years, especially for juvenile offenders. Remember Angelo Atwell? There was some hope there. For a minute, anyway.
Didn't court rule that keeping him in prison for over a century was, you know, ridiculous?
They did, thankfully. They saw how absurd it was.
Didn't last, though, did it?
It didn't. Got overturned. And more recently, just in 2021, there was a class action lawsuit against the Parole Commission.
What happened with that?
It argued the system basically violated the Constitution because it focused on the past crime, not rehabilitation, but it got dismissed.
So what now? What happens to Randy Baggett, those 175 juvenile offenders? Is there any hope for them, or are they stuck?
It's a tough situation, no doubt. But that's where Randy Baggett's story and FFF, they really come in. They're focusing on public awareness, trying to change the laws.
With the Mercy for Children Act, right?
Exactly. They're showing that even in a system as big and powerful as the justice system, one person can make a difference.
It's a long shot, but what they're doing gives me hope. This whole deep dive has really opened my eyes. It makes you think, what is justice, really? When it comes to kids who messed up, are we punishing them forever or giving them a real chance?
And when there's proof someone's turned their life around, but the system doesn't care, can we really say justice is being served? It makes you wonder.
It really does. Thanks for guiding us through all of this. It's complicated stuff.
Glad to do it. Important to talk about it if we want things to change.
And to everyone listening, we hope this deep dive into the Florida justice system has given you a lot to think about. We've talked about court rulings and legal battles, but at its core, it's about whether we believe in second chances. What do you think? Thanks for joining us for this deep dive, and we'll catch you next time.
Thank you for listening to Fight the Good Fight. Please join us by signing up on our website and help us financially by donating even $5 a month. It would be a tremendous help.